We're talking with Cheryl Costa about UFO sightings across the country and 167,632 individual UFO reports went into this massive work, this UFO Sightings Desk Reference, a book that she's put together covering 2001 to 2020. There are a lot of surprises in the data that she breaks down. Who's number one? What city sees more UFOs than any other city? And what's it like in your neck of the woods? Who's seeing what where you live? We'll open up the phone lines in 20 minutes or so, and you can ask Cheryl about where you live, who's seeing what. In the meantime, we're going to get back into her data right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Cheryl, one of the creative things you did with the UFO reports, all this massive pile of data, was to break it down by latitude and longitude. What were you going for there?
Well, okay, I had a handful of scientists came back to me and said, wow, if you could put latitude and longitude and information in there, it would be helpful for other types of reports. The average person isn't really going to be too interested in that. But one of the things we did do, though, was in 2016, there was a book out that said the 37th parallel was the UFO superhighway.
Right. Okay.
And I had written an article in 2018 where I had taken New Fork and MUFON data for 2018, and I took a look at it. And there were about eight other latitudes had far more sighting numbers. And a lot of people pushed back, oh, you only use 1 year. You know, so we waited till we got done with this whole 20 years with latitude and longitude information. And the 37th parallel is certainly not the UFO superhighway it's purported to be. There's about 10 other latitudes that have far more sightings.
All right, so there's 10 books ready to be written about those other longitude latitudes, huh?
Well, yeah, actually, yeah. One of the things that we're looking to do is this book, this UFO Sightings Desk Reference, we can only give you state and county information, okay? We're going to be producing 50 individual state books where we can actually drill down for each individual state right down to the county and municipal level. And it's going to be a little bit smaller book, but we're going to be able to produce those out. And we just came up with a manufacturing process to make it easier. Instead of pushing out a book a week, we're going to be able to push out maybe about 15 or 20 a month. So they'll all be coming out this year.
You do have some breakdowns, though, city by city. You have a list of the top cities, right? Yeah.
Yes,
let's go through some of those. So what's number one?
Do you want city or county first?
Let's start with cities.
Okay, cities. Phoenix is number one. Okay, they had 1,221. Okay, New York City is number two, 971. Las Vegas ranks in at number three with 970.
Yeah, go Vegas, yeah.
There you go. Los Angeles, the city, had in the 700s. Okay. Seattle, 733. Portland, 712. Chicago, 701. Tucson, 676. There's an unspecified county. That's, again, that's that catch-all for every place that nobody could, they didn't tell us where they were. San Diego ranks number 10, 636. Houston, Texas, 606. Denver, Colorado, 564. Albuquerque it ranks in at 13. They're 541. Orlando, Florida, 539. Austin, Texas, 532. San Antonio, Texas, Miami, Philadelphia, Colorado Springs, and Sacramento. Now, that's on the cover page for the United States. What we did with each state is we break it down. We give you the top 20 counties and top 20 cities in each state in this book. The other thing we did in the United States of America summary chapter in the book, we did 216 counties, top counties, we ranked them, and 216 top cities.
Okay. Let's go back to the city list first, the ones you just gave us. So obviously most of these are pretty big cities, but it's not really entirely about population. Phoenix is really big. Las Vegas is big, too, but it's not bigger than L.A., and it's higher on the list. And then, you know, Chicago is much bigger than Portland. And then you got Tucson there in the top 10. What's going on in Tucson? What's that?
Well, again, remember, it's that thing, you can take a place like Chicago, you've got four seasons up there, so it's, you know, cold, Great Lakes weather, overcast most of the time in the fall and winter, you know, that type of thing. We found that the primary drivers were population, temperate weather, leisure time, and hours of darkness. Those were the principal drivers. And then we also access to broadband was a major driver.
People
don't have broadband, they can't report them, or they generally don't. And we saw this impacting the rural areas, and we see this impacting western rural states.
I wonder if cultural issues get involved in it too. Las Vegas is a UFO town, and that, you know, we've been pounding them with UFO stories for a long time. I think the population here is accustomed to hearing about the subject, maybe less of a stigma attached to it. I don't know if that applies to like rural areas, whether they'd be comfortable reporting a UFO if it might get out to their neighbors. What do you think?
I've seen that in when I was writing my column. I'd sometimes come across sighting reports that they wouldn't tell us the city, but they would make a comment like, there's only 12 houses in our village, and if we report it, everyone will know it's us. You know, that kind of thing. Now, something you said about Vegas. Vegas is a party town.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
and
for sure.
We observed something when we did the hourly charts. Okay, the numbers fall off. Remember I said like 80% of the sightings happened between 75 to 80% of the sightings happened between 4 o'clock in the afternoon and about 11:30 at night, and then it falls off pretty steep, okay? And then that number falls off, and then down around 5 o'clock in the morning, it's bottoms out, and there's a little bump there, and it's usually the taking the dog out for the first walk, going out for the first smoke, going out and driving to work, something like that. But in Vegas, there was a bump at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and 4 o'clock. And I shared this with an investigator out there, and she came back to me and said, well, that's when the clubs and shows let out.
Yeah. You
know? Again, it's that leisure, it's as much a measurement of human activity as it is the UFOs.
And maybe their state of mind at 1, 2, and 4 o'clock. So counties, what about counties?
Counties. Now, this is interesting. It's not as intuitive as cities. Los Angeles County is number one. Okay, they had over 4,000. Maricopa County, which is essentially the Phoenix area, is number two. And a lot of people say, "Well, wait a minute, Los Angeles County, there's all the lights." You know, people keep saying that to me, and I said, "Look, I can't tell you why, other than the fact that if you do go up into the hills, you get above the city lights, and then you can get a pretty good view of this stuff." So, Cook County was number three. San Diego County was number four. King County, Washington was number five. Orange County, California, number six. Riverside, California, number seven. Clark County, Nevada, number eight, right there, Las Vegas. San Bernardino County. One thing, part of Los Angeles and San Bernardino County are on that 37th parallel, okay? And a lot of the numbers that 37th parallel has are accumulated when it goes through a major city like San Bernardino or Los Angeles, okay? So just, you know, for people who are interested in the 37th parallel. There's New York County in New York City, which is essentially Manhattan. Harris County in Texas, which is essentially the Houston area. I forget where Harris County is. But they're number 11. Horry County in South Carolina is number 12. Pima County, Arizona is number 13, which is, again, interesting that these desert towns seem to be really big for UFO sightings. And it goes right down. You've got Monmouth County in Oregon. Skokomish County in Washington is number 15. Broward County, Florida, that surprises a lot of people, it's number 16. Dade County, Florida, number 17. Sacramento County, California, 18. Palm Beach County in Florida is 19, and Suffolk County, Long Island, is number 20. And that's being a New York resident, that's a big deal because a lot of people used to say, oh, it's the Lake Erie effect, that's where all the sightings are, or it's along the Hudson Valley. Actually, Suffolk County, Long Island is ground zero in New York State.
Let me ask you this. Is there any, like, blank spot of UFOs, a place where you would expect some people to report, but just there's nothing there, and there's not much of anything anyway that stands out to you?
I think the biggest blank spot that we've seen is there's a couple of places in the Midwest where it just falls off. I'll give you an example. In our book, we have in the United States summary chapter, we have census charts, and we have little arrows pointing to the different states and telling you what the numbers were based on a census chart. And if you look at the states that are touching the Great Lakes, again, water is a what we call an influencer. The numbers are in the many thousands of sightings. Go two states away, and it falls into the low hundreds. Okay? So these are deep rural states, okay, and they're landlocked. Okay, so water is a major influencer. Fault lines are an influencer. Dead mining towns, dead strip mine areas, fracking and dead oil fields, that type of thing. They seem to hover around and loiter around there. They're very concerned about our pollution. And if you talk to people who are experiencers, they say, well, those folks told us to take care of our planet. So, and I got that information about fault lines and toxic sites from researcher Tom Conwell.
I don't think the message is getting through. So, but we appreciate the editorial from them, I guess. Let's take a couple of calls, see if people want to ask about their area. First-time caller, Michael in the Hollywood Hills. Hi, Michael. Welcome to Coast.
Oh, thanks for taking my phone call. I wanted to share an unexplained phenomenon regarding an unusual craft that I'm still puzzled to this day. First of all, I was in a documentary titled UFOs. It has begun, probably you have heard.
Oh, sure.
But at the moment, that's not what I'm calling about. So far, I haven't heard what I'm about to describe, which I observed it took place in Portugal in the late 50s. In the island of Madeira. Of course, at that time, there was no television, just a radio station on the island. Anyway, I was in my family's property in a garden away from the main house, further down by the guest house. Then I heard an unusual humming sound in the air in a low altitude. I got scared, of course. I was very young. I tried to take cover near the structure of the house, and then I saw this craft about 5 feet long, a dark silver color with square windows, and had propellers. It was not a conventional size airplane, and looking back, it resembles a DC-3, but a very small craft. It flew by the guest house. Then I ran after the direction of the craft towards the side of the two-story main house. I was calling, my family. Apparently, no one heard me. I was concerned, of course, and I climbed up the outside steps that leads to the large terrace. By then, I saw the craft again making a left turn above the trees. And my feeling to this day, only speculation, of course, this craft, appears to be controlled inside by some intelligence, and definitely it was not some kind of a toy. Who knows? Perhaps from another dimension. What can I say?
I'll tell you what, that's a good story, Michael. Let's ask Cheryl about it. Cheryl, first of all, you, before we get into the specifics of that craft, you don't cover Portugal or other parts of the world. I don't know how you would if you had enough energy to try.
United States databases. I've had requests from people in Europe to do theirs, but I've had a lot of I've reached out to try and get access to databases over there, but I've to no avail.
So this idea of a 5-foot-long DC-3 with propellers, anything like that come to mind?
Well, actually, yes. In the late 40s, there were reports of small craft that looked, some of them looked like airplanes. Okay, and there was one in Lincoln, New York in 1949. About a 9-year-old kid was out playing, and he heard a humming sound, and he looked up, and there was this thing that was probably about as long as his dad's car. And it looked sort of like he described it sort of like a Buck Rogers rocket ship kind of thing. And it started hovering down towards him. He literally had to lay flat on the ground, but it sort of resembled a rocket plane of sorts. And I read a number of stories like that when I was doing my column.
You know, there's a friend of mine who has a theory. He calls it mimicry, that the UFOs, wherever they're from, they sometimes mimic our technology. They'll build something like ours or maybe a little bit more advanced, in a sense, maybe to blend in, to not stand out so much. Or
I've heard that as well, yes.
And then, of course, we've tried to build things that look like them, too. You know, all the attempts, the Avro car and things that tried to look like flying saucers didn't do so well. So, a small DC-3. I can't say I've ever heard that one before, but that's pretty interesting. We've got a lot of folks on the phones. If you have questions for Cheryl about what's happened in your area, what kinds of things have been seen in the sky over the years, please hang on there or call in a bit, and we'll get to as many of your calls as we can. We'll try to take one more here real quick. This is east of the Rockies, Roger in Tennessee. Roger, we got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, so please share your question with us.
Okay, my question is this. I hadn't heard of anything, any encounter where they saw a light and it was pulsating. Okay, this is 71 or 72 in Tennessee. I was looking out the window at approximately 1 o'clock in the morning, and from my right periphery came like a falling star, but it was not any angle of descent toward the earth. It went directly horizontally from the right to the left, stopped in the middle of my planet, and it pulsed approximately a time and a half its size, stopped in the sky, a pulse, and that went on for probably 2 minutes or more, and then all of a sudden it shot in two different directions at the same time at the speed of a falling star. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Was there a particular, did it pulse with a certain color?
No, it was all white light, just like a star. And like I said, it looked like it went to time and a half its size, and it was a steady beat, like a heartbeat that you can anticipate.
I'll tell you what, Roger, thank you for sharing that. We're going to have to take a break. I'll let Cheryl think about the answer and also maybe about the area of Tennessee. What part of Tennessee are you in?
It's around the Greene County area. The next day on the local AM station, they said they were flooded for hours.
I'll tell you what, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll get into that a little bit. We're talking with Cheryl Costa about this massive undertaking. She and her writing partner have finished the UFO sightings desk reference 2001 to 2020, based on more than 167,000 individual UFO reports filed with two major UFO reporting centers. She's broken it down into multiple different categories, bite-sized pieces, digestible chunks, really interesting info. And now that the UFO subject is perilously close to going mainstream, you would think that this kind of thing, a reference like this, would be useful in newsrooms or in home libraries for anyone who would be interested in the subject matter. We're going to jump back into some calls and some categories with Cheryl right after this on Coast to Coast AM. So Cheryl, the caller from Tennessee, mentions this fireball that comes down to the ground, I guess, and then splits into two. Do you have a category for something like that?
I don't. The two national databases don't have one, and I wish they did. Usually it's either listed under unknown or light. We had one like that in New York State in February 2013, when three balls of light came down into an industrial park area when they were about 150, 200 feet above the ground. They merged and became one big blue light and then came down to almost, you know, about 20 feet off the ground, and all the cars on the access road quit, and their cell phones died, all that kind of thing. It was a pretty amazing thing. Couldn't get anybody to report it. I ended up being the only person who reported the story.
I remember a case from travels to Russia, UFO, massive UFO over an ICBM base in the Ukraine in the early 80s, and it split into pieces, then merged back together and took off. Couple of other cases like that here in North America, but not too many. We'll go back to the phones, see what people want to talk about. Let's go to Bud in Ventura, west of the Rockies. Hi, Bud. Bud,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. You're on with Cheryl Costa. What's on your mind?
All right. Well, I just wanted to tell you about a story. I was at the Point Magoo Air Show. I can't remember when it was, when the F-22 Raptor, the United States just showed it to the people.
Right.
An amazing airplane. And I was looking up in the sky, and I saw a thing that looked like when you turn on your stove, on your big burner, you got, you know, it sends out all these little flames of gas, and this spherical thing was up in the sky. And I thought, that's kind of strange that, because I could see it, and I thought everybody could see it, but nobody wanted to pay attention to it. And I never read about it in the paper or anything. And I just figured that might have been a Navy thing, but...
Well, let's ask Cheryl about it. Cheryl, does that ring a bell? Sphere with kind of a sphere of flames like that?
I've heard stories like that. There's a thought that some of the spheres, depending upon what the weather conditions are, might the electrostatic, there's like an electrostatic discharge builds up on the surface of the sphere. And people have reported sort of like a St. Elmo's fire type of thing kind of dancing around on the sphere. But I've only seen a handful of reports like that out of the many thousands and thousands that are reported about spheres.
We're going to the wildcard line, Diana in New York. Hi, Diana. You're on with Cheryl Costa.
Hi, I love your show. And Cheryl, you are a brilliant and brave woman to write about these things. Anyway, in the mid-1860s, my great-great-grandfather, José García, was the mayor of a small city in Spain, in Avila, called San Miguel de Cerrezuela. And they, for centuries, had been seeing these round green lights. Well, anyway, his granddaughter, my grandmother, who was born in 1890, would go there to vacation. And everyone, including the local priest, told her, oh, don't worry, because she was naturally enough taken aback when she saw things flying in the sky before airplanes. And they said, it's fine. These people, these entities, help with the crops. They're great. Don't be afraid. Now, I don't know what to make of that. What do you think?
I've heard stories like that, depending upon where you are. I mean, some places people are terrified of things that come down, but these kinds of things have been reported back to biblical times. The Roman soldiers and centurions reported things like this. I suppose in some remote, you know, county growing areas, the type of thing, people may have had a very positive experience by meeting the people who were flying these things. I've heard, you know, you hear folk stories about that sort of thing. That's about all I know.
Thanks for calling, Diana. We're going to Kevin in South Pasadena, California. Hi, Kevin. You're on with Cheryl Costa.
Hi, George.
Hey there.
A privilege to talk to you. Hi, Cheryl. I used to live in Los Alamitos. Actually, it was an unincorporated city in Orange County called Rossmore. It was situated between Los Alamitos and Seal Beach. And to the east of us was the La Salle Naval Air Station. And to the southwest, or kind of the southeast of us, was the Seal Beach Naval Weapons Station. And I was wondering if you got any reports from that area. And it was only about 2 miles from the ocean, so.
Do you know what county it was?
Oh, well, it's right on the border of Los Alamitos is Orange County, and Seal Beach is L.A. County.
Okay, well, L.A. County is, you know, had over 4,300 in the last 20 years, and Orange County had 1,500, over 1,500. So, yeah, there's a lot of reports of it in that general area.
I was 9 years old, and we live right on the south end of Rossmore and overlooked the Naval Weapons Station. And one night in the middle of the night, I woke up and I saw a red light, looked like a navigation light, a red navigation light, and then kind of it looked like it dropped a small flare down into the weapons station. And we were always getting aircraft. I told my parents the next morning, they kind of blew it off. Oh, it was a helicopter. But for the almost 30 years I lived there, I never saw anything else like that. You know, we'd see jets all the time. We had jets flying out and helos and sub hunters and stuff. But it was just kind of odd right over the weapons station. And the weapons station holds the nuclear arsenal for the Pacific Fleet. So, you know.
There you go.
I wonder.
Well, yeah, there you go. I mean, there's a heck of a lot of historical evidence about UFO interest in nuclear weapons and nuclear facilities of all kinds, right, Cheryl?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That seems to be the big thing. Even now, since the Cold War, most bases in the United States have become reserve bases or National Guard bases, that type of thing. But where they still see a majority of UFO occurrences around our active bases, our bases that still have nuclear technology of some sort. I got that right from Lou Alessandro.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. We're going to Dave in Tucson, Arizona, which, Dave, I don't know if you knew it, but Cheryl has just informed us on the list of the top 10, is it cities? Cities, yeah, that Tucson makes the top 10. Dave, welcome to Coast to Coast. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been a truck driver for over 20 years, and I used to drive for a company that would, I'd go to Douglas every day in the afternoon, and when I'd be coming back to Tucson, I'd come through Tombstone, and there's a Border Patrol checkpoint just north of there on your way back to St. David. And the topography of the area there, you're coming down out of the mountain range, and it's sort of like steps, the road steps down in elevation into the valley and then down to St. David and into the Interstate 10 at Benson. And the topography is where I was sitting in the truck coming away from Tombstone and the checkpoint. I was at a high elevation, and I'm looking. If I looked to my left, I'd see the mountains that are north of Fort Huachuca, and to my right, the Chiricahua Mountains. And out, right in my windshield, this was the one day I wished I would have had a dash cam. So right in my windshield, right at the level I'm at, they were flying not more than I had to be in it, 1,000 feet off the ground. Two Air Force jets flying so fast that they had to be just staying just underneath the sound barrier. And this object they were escorting had two more jets flying behind it. But this object had nothing aerodynamic about it. It was approximately the size of if you put four 747s together in a square. And it looked like the only way I could describe it, it'd be like a hospital campus or a university campus. It looked like buildings. And they had little lights on the corners. It was all, you know, squared off. And it was flat on the bottom. And it went by me in a flash right in my window, and I watched it go into the west, and it was sundown. The sun had just gone below the horizon, and I followed its trajectory as long as I could see it, and it went past the Whetstone Mountains, which are, you know, adjacent to Port Huachuca, and I watched it, and I knew that it would be headed towards the San Pedro Valley, and that anyone on the Interstate 10 would have to see this thing because it would cross over the I-10. So I knew no one would believe me if I told them what I saw, and I just pretty much kept it under my hat. I told a couple friends of mine. And then about 3 years later, I was helping a fellow work on his boat, and he lives in Oracle, and he worked at the mine in in Winkleman with the Ray Mine. And him and all his buddies would ride the shuttle van home. And we were talking about UFOs, and I told him about that, what I saw. And his eyes lit up, and he got his spine straightened up, and he said, "My God," he said, "we saw that thing." He said, "all of us in the van, we were coming up the hill out of San Manuel, and we saw it flying down the San Pedro Valley, and it went straight up right there in front of us, and the jets followed it." Huh. So I had corroboration.
Well, let's get Cheryl into here to comment about that. I mean, Cheryl, do you have a category for this guy's describing 4 747s with windows? Sounds like it's a skyscraper that's flying.
He also said it was a square formation. Yes.
Yeah, yes. It looked like buildings. It looked like a campus. It looked like a hospital campus or a.
Got it.
The best
Got
I could describe it.
Okay, this the square shape. It's one you don't hear about a lot. In the United States, we had over in the last 20 years, we had over 800 of them sighted. Actually, 836, with the majority of them being in since 2010 in California. The square, they've had over 105 sighted in the last 20 years.
It was absolutely amazing, but I've seen three different, I've got a photo of a UFO. I was taking pictures of a thunderhead over my house. I couldn't see it with my naked eye, but after I looked at the photos on my computer, there was a UFO in front of the thunderhead. It must have been flying so fast that my camera caught it.
Wow. Dave, you should put that on social media or send it to us here at Coast. We'll take a look at it. Thanks you for calling. You know, Douglas, I got a friend of mine who's a car dealer down there. So I would think when I've been down there, that's wide open skies. You think a great spot to go UFO looking at or searching. And, you know, I guess that's why it's at the top 10 there. We'll try to get one more call in with Cheryl Costa. We'll go to the first time caller, Kathy in San Antonio. Hi, Kathy. We got just a minute or two.
There.
Welcome.
I live by an Army air base in San Antonio and an airfield that just opened called Martindale. Around the time that the chemtrails were very prolific and they were talking about the planet Nibiru appearing, we were seeing two moons. And then we saw what had to have been a UFO. It was buzzing the base. It was flying between that in a nearby park in a zigzag pattern, and then it was literally just going back and forth, just sideways, like it was almost like a ping pong. It was just going back and forth across the roadway. That was around the same time that the other bases were complaining that they were seeing a lot of activity of UFOs going and exploring. I don't know if they were exploring or if they were just taunting bases. And then shortly after that time, we actually had what sounds like an air raid siren from the base. They never did explain what that was.
Huh. Kathy, let me get Cheryl in here to comment because we got to move on. Thank you for the call. Cheryl.
Okay, San Antonio had, they ranked number 3 in Texas, and they had close to 500 sightings in the last 20 years. So, who knows what that was? I've heard stories of things like that around active bases, but you know, these days you can't tell whether it's a drone or if it's one of the UFOs.
Do you have categories that break it down by flying patterns? Like she was, Kathy was saying, zigzagging. Is there a category for how it flies as opposed to what it looks like?
There's no category like that with either of the reporting basis or reporting services.
Back to the previous caller with this thing that was the size of a city or a hospital or something. Do you categorize them by size? I mean, do you?
Sometimes in the narrative, people give you an idea of it's the size of an aircraft carrier or something like this, or a football field or something like this, but there's actually no category to check off. I wish there was.
Is there anything else that jumps out at you that you want to share with the audience? We got about a minute left about this UFO sightings desk reference 01 to 2020. I mean, it's a monumental piece of work and a great resource.
Well, okay, if people want to get it, it's exclusively available on Amazon right now. And if you search on Amazon for Cheryl Costa, Cheryl with a C, Costa with a C, you'll get some books that I've written. And the one that you're interested in is this one. We made this thing pink. It's called the pink. We call it the pink book. And it's got a little white flying saucer on the front of it. And that's the 2001 to 2020 book. We dedicated it to Coral Lorenz, who is the founder of APRO.
Cheryl, it's always great to talk to you. Congratulations to you and Linda for putting this out. And I know that it's a reference book that people can really benefit. It would be great data to have in anybody's library. Thanks again, and please stay in touch.
We will.
All right. And we have a link to the book. If you weren't able to jot that down, we have a link on the Coast to Coast website. Coming up, Nick Redfern, Diary of Secrets, Marilyn Monroe.